great goaltending, good looking forecheck, pace,
Benwick,
speed.
Corsi.
It was a fantastic game four for your, my, and our Colorado Avalanche as we welcome you into this week's episode of the Purple Howler podcast, in which we talk all things Colorado Avalanche.
And I'm Anthony Masterson. Did you see the rating share that the city of Denver got? It set a record for NBC Sports Network. They got like a 9 share last night.
Hashtag hockey.
Hey, man, like, it's cool that the Avs in Denver is getting behind this team, you know?
It is cool. It is cool. And this is your one-stop shop for all things Avalanche, as it has been in the 6 years that we have done this podcast. Yep. We talk apps. That's what we do. We do it well. We've gotten quite a following from our hard-hitting hockey analysis. Yep. And here we are as the Avalanche head into Game 5 of the second round of the Stanley Cup.
Dan Hynote had a great game last night.
Milan Hayduk. John Michael Lyles. Some fantastic, fantastic. Chris Drury, the leadership.
Oh, well, I mean, he was in the Little League World Series. Did you know that,
Strong
Chris Drury?
The blue line.
World Series and Stanley Cup
World
Final.
Series. Yeah, yeah.
That's never been mentioned.
It really is. The Little League World Series is one of those things that's just like so insane how many elite athletes take part in that. Where you'll just like, even nowadays, like you'll see guys who come over from Korea or Japan or Taiwan and they played in it for their team.
You're like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Wow, you're really good. Yeah, except now it's like, oh, they played in the Little League World Series in 2008. You're like, wait a minute. No, that can't be possible. There's no way that this is right. The Little League World Series, I remember that from 1994.
Yep. And blah, blah, blah.
Real World Series that year. Well, hey, welcome in to this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, where we talk Colorado Rockies baseball. Hi, hello. On that note, though, the other night I went to game two of the Nuggets series with one Nate Kreckman, our good buddy from Alabama.
So it's your fault?
And yeah, the Nuggets are, I think, 38-6 this year in games that I did not attend and 0-2 in games that I attend. And that is not a joke. I'm pretty sure those are actually the numbers. But Nate and I were having a conversation about, he did the Athletic Denver podcast, which has been put on hiatus. They're kind of revamping their podcast with the Athletic. And I said, when it comes back, can I do like a serial style week by week installment trying to figure out what happened to the ill-fated Colorado Avalanche mascot Howler? Like, I really, that is a serious passion of mine. Like, that may turn into a pet project in which I actually try to do a podcast on what happened.
Did something happen to Howler? Did I miss this?
Howler just disappeared. And, like, I don't even know if the team, I'm sure they did, but I don't even know if the team, like, released anything about it. This is, like, 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. Howler was he's the most fascinating mascot in Denver sports history to me because he came about as the result of a logo. So the Avalanche had that old
foot logo
on the shoulder of the jerseys, which was supposed to be an abominable snowman.
I always thought it was funny when Adam Foote wore that jersey. I mean,
yeah, wore an actual foot. It was fantastic.
It's like, oh.
But they had no mascot for, like, the Avs came around 95, 96. I don't think Howler even existed until, like, 2003. So it was, like, 7-8 years into franchise history. They were like, hey, we should do something with this logo. So they came up with Howler. Howler was this, like, for some reason, very furry, abominable snowman mascot. He didn't look like he was made out of snow. He looked like the abominable snowman from the Frosty movies. And but then one year, he was just gone. And I don't know. And they replaced him with Bernie, and Bernie's a dog, and everybody loves dogs. And to be frank, that actually kind of makes more sense as an Avalanche mascot. But Howler. I don't know what happened to Howler, and I've always been heavily invested in finding out what happened to Howler. So maybe one day.
I mean, clearly.
I will do a podcast.
This sounds like a passion project for you.
I have this list of passion project podcasts in my head that I really want to do. This is like the fourth one. I'm assuming none of these will ever actually get out of my brain. This is the only one that I've cared enough to, for some reason, create and then go 6 years
and follow
with.
Through on. Yeah.
And so with that, we'll get talking about the things that we discuss on this show, and good things for the most part as of late. Your My and Our Colorado Rockies returning home to Coors Field from a 7-game road trip in which they went 4-3. A couple of wins in Atlanta, a couple of wins in Milwaukee, bookending a 7-game swing. They scored 22 runs over the final 2 days of that road trip in Milwaukee. Wins of 11-4 and 11-6. One of them was a bullpen game on Wednesday, but hey, it's the major leagues. You don't apologize for winning bullpen games. And then yesterday, they blow up early on. And on a day in which John Gray kind of labored, it was a weird day for John Gray. He had good stuff. But made it into the sixth, gave up 5 runs on 7 hits. They still end up winning by 5.
He had a 7-0 lead after one inning of pitching, basically. So, and honestly, sometimes blowouts are the hardest to pitch in, only because the adrenaline's not the same. Your pitch mix might be a little bit different. And also, it kind of started to go away from when he almost got decapitated by a line drive. So that probably played a little bit of part in it, too. Off the bat of Ben Gamble, the first hit of the game, I think in the third inning, got the first 2 outs and then got smoked. And after that, gave up 3 runs and then was a little off kilter. But again, he had a 7-run lead for pretty much the entire game, did enough, worked into it enough. Like, I don't know. Like, it was fine. It's one of those weird games you kind of got to chalk up just because it was such a blowout so early.
Yeah.
But before we get going, I want to talk about something I put on Twitter yesterday about how the road trip, I called it a shit sandwich.
Yeah.
Because you had the first 2 games were wins, the middle 3 games were losses, and the last 2 games were wins. So you put those together.
Right.
And you got a nice little little sandwich there. But you came back and said a shit sandwich is a bad thing, which inherently, yes, obviously it is. My point was, when you eat a sandwich, the name of the sandwich is based on the content inside the middle of it. If you eat a turkey sandwich, it's turkey in the middle. You're not calling it a bread and turkey sandwich. You eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The peanut butter and jelly is in the middle. You don't call it that. So I'm saying the delicious wins on the outside of the shit meat in the middle. Imagine it's like an Arby's sandwich. It's an Arby's.
I'm so hungry. I could eat it.
That road trip was an Arby's roast beef sandwich. Because you got the King's Hawaiian bun on the outside. That's fine. That's fine. Everybody likes King's Hawaiian buns. And then you got the roast beef in the middle. And it's just like warm but not that warm, you know? You feel bad afterwards. But like, you know, you're still ate. You're fine, you know. You're going to survive probably.
I'm going to give you a couple points on this. One, I'm not completely anti Arby's, but I also don't know if I've ever had the Arby's roast beef. I go to Arby's I get the Market Fresh sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, but the Market Fresh ones are actually like very good.
And
the turkey
ranch. And like I only use Arby's because Arby's is
I said ranch. Now Tyler Q in Utah is gonna like blast this podcast from the top of a mountain.
No, like Arby's is the easy go-to. Like Arby's is fine. Like whatever, it's fast food. Yeah. Who cares at the end of the day? But it's just like why people hate the Eagles because of the Big Lebowski. Like, you know, like they like, oh, it's cool to hate the Eagles now because the Big Lebowski hated the Eagles. Like the Eagles are good. Yeah. Whatever. Who cares?
Yeah. Like,
but that's what I call it. You call it a shit sandwich because that's literally
Here's my argument.
The road trip was great. Like they went 4-3 against 2 playoff teams from last year.
Right. If it was a 5-game road trip in which they had a win on either side and 3 losses in the middle, or a 9-game road trip in which they had 2 wins on either side and 5 losses in the middle, and it was a sub 500 road trip, then I think
that's a baconator.
But if you come home, oh, that's where the name comes from. Okay, I got it. But when you come home with an above 500 road trip, that's a good sandwich.
Okay. Yeah. No. Listen.
I would say it's like a spam sandwich.
I agree.
Like it's not good, but it's
saying
good
the
enough.
Same thing.
I've literally never
just
had
in
spam.
Different ways. You never had spam?
No.
You ever been to Hawaii?
No, I never have.
It's a huge thing there, obviously. They got these things called spam masubis.
Why is that?
Why do they have? Why is spam a big thing?
Why is spam so big?
GIs, dude. Military presence.
Is that actually it? Huh. Are we still – it's 2019. The military-industrial complex has been running rampant for 50 years. Are we still just shoving spam at our service members?
Well, no, but they did it back then. But then Hawaiians came to
– so it just carried
they came
over.
To take it as their own. And they've got a lot of actual like – interesting dishes, like spam musubis, where it's just like, it's almost like a big, like, I don't know, 6-inch long, like sushi thing, but it's got a big thing of spam on top and they serve it cold and you eat it like raw. It's great. No, horrible. It does sound horrible, but then you eat it and you're like, okay, I get it.
Yo. Well, so anyway, I think the ultimate lesson of all of it is it was a fun road trip.
The lesson we're both learning here is that the road trip was totally fine.
That's what comes along from this road trip. The Rockies, yeah, take 4 of 7 from 2 playoff teams, 2 division winners from last year, and come home for a not crucial by any stretch road trip or homestand, but I think a homestand in which it would really behoove this team to go like 8-1, 7-2. Is this a 9-game? Yeah. It is a 9-gamer. Yeah.
If we must.
A 6-3 road trip, I'm fine with. You go like 5-4 on this homestand. Duh.
Well, and also considering how well they've played, or they played at home in the last homestand, you want to keep that going. And the offense has started to pick it up again. They had a pretty good series in Atlanta. They had a great last 2 games in Milwaukee. You know, your offense is getting to be more what you expected it was going to be at this point. Everyone's healthy again. Murphy and Dahl and McMahon are back. You're not getting guys who are struggling like, you know, Hampson or Valleca or whatever, getting at bats consistently. Rival Tapia has been a revelation so far. Yeah. So this is the offense that you thought you were going to get. Nolan's been crushing the ball. Like, ever since Nolan's first homer, he's hitting like 350 and driven in more runs than he's played games in that time.
He's like 7 for his last 11.
Yeah.
With, I think, 4 extra base hits over the last couple of games.
He doesn't suck.
Quite good.
This is a road trip against 3, or a homestand against 3 NL West teams. It's the D-backs, who are playing very well right now, better than a lot of people thought they were going to. Then you got the Giants, who aren't good, though they're playing better than people thought they would still, even though they're not good. And then the Padres, who more than likely will not have Fernando Tatis Jr. back at the time. You see the play where he like tore his hamstring or strained his hamstring, whatever he did?
No, I actually did not see the video.
He pulled a Mark Reynolds, like the splits kind of thing that Mark Reynolds did when they won that game against the Nationals. Except he hurt himself instead of just looking like a badass like Mark Reynolds did.
Yeah.
So he will probably still be out for that time. The Padres have played pretty well on the road. They split with the Braves this past week. They're going home to face the Dodgers this weekend. I don't know. It's, you know, it's where you can start to make some hay. You're playing the NL West and you got a chance to really vault yourself over some teams. And right now, yeah. I mean, they're 15-17. We're recording here on May the 3rd. Last year through May 2nd, they were 17-15. They're pretty much where they were last year.
They started
3-12, and they're 2 games under 5.
They're 12-5 over their last 17 games.
Like, that is the Rockies team that you expected.
They've also, and this is kind of strange, but it's May 3rd, and they've played 3 series against the National League West. Now they will double that total on this homestand alone. Arizona, San Francisco, and San Diego for 3.
And I will be there next Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah.
And I still don't know if I will be or not. But I will know by Sunday. So I'll keep you posted. I'm hoping
I won't have to see your stupid face.
But this, it's like you said, it's time when you can start making a little bit of positive ground for yourself. Winning games is great, outside of the division, but inside the division is really when you start feeling like, okay, now you're having impactful wins. The other thing that's frustrating about where the Rockies are right now is I'm pretty sure that over the course of the 5-game winning streak from April 14th through April 19th, and then the good stretch that has followed, I think every single day that the Rockies have won or lost, the Dodgers have done the same, with the exception of like one day. The Dodgers did lose on the first. The Rockies took the 3rd game in Milwaukee. They picked up a game there. But April 29th, a Dodgers loss was also a Rockies loss. April 23rd and 24th, Dodgers losses were 1 loss and 1 win for the Rockies. And April 20th, a Dodgers loss was also a Rockies loss. So the Rockies basically made up no ground over winning 12.
They're 4.5 back right now with the Dodgers. So, you know.
But yeah, that's fine. It's, you know, it's May 3rd. But this is a, they're in an encouraging place coming home to a spot where they were fantastic on the last homestand. And now you get an opportunity to see what these other teams really look like. Obviously, they've seen the Giants and the Padres. The D-backs have played really well so far this season, which has been a little baffling. But they are a team that's hanging in there right now. They're second place in the division at 18-13. They've won 7 of their last 10. They're also an 11-6 team away from Chase Field this year. So you kind of get an idea of what you look like compared to these other squads in the division. And this series, I think, is going to tell us a lot. Are the D-backs really a team that – I haven't gotten a chance to watch them at all this year. Are they really a team that seems like it has staying power, or is it a team that's just off to a good April slash early May and eventually –
Well, I mean, their team right now, their offense, is being led by, like, Christian Walker and right. Eduardo Escobar and Adam Jones. You know, is – do you believe in them going forward? Who knows? I'm going to say probably not. You know, the back of the baseball card for those guys isn't as great as some of the guys for the Rockies. Although they seem to be, like, every single game they're in it, basically. You know, and they've showed a lot of resilience. They've got a lot of comeback wins this year. Greg Holland has not allowed a single run this season. He has been absolutely dominant in the ninth inning. He's kind of how he started 2 years ago with the Rockies. So he has been outstanding for them for a pickup there. Archie Bradley's been good,
which is good to see.
The back end of the bullpen's been really good for them. The offense has been good enough.
Good against the Rockies.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Offense has been good enough. You know, they got the highest slugging percentage in the National League. So, you know, most extra base hits. You know, they're a team that's going to piss you off, basically, because you're like, oh,
yeah,
they're not going to be that great. David Peralta's not going to beat me again. Like, you know, and then he does.
Yeah.
And Ketel Marte is going to come in and probably hit 9 triples in this series because that's what he does against the Rockies.
Yeah, so. That's true. He is that
no,
guy.
But do you believe in their pitching staff? I don't think so. Zach Greinke is 1,000 years old and he's hitting more home runs than he's giving up this year, which is fun. They just put Zach Godley in the bullpen because he's been terrible. Robbie Ray's still walking the ballpark and striking everybody out like he always does. He's the new Kalush from the left side. You know. Yeah. Their pitching numbers are not great. They're in a lower tier of the National League. So hopefully they get a big fat dose of Coors this week.
Yeah that'd be – I think that would be a welcome development.
Yeah.
I would be
– I mean, the Rockies took 11 of 19 from the D-backs last year. Really helped them out, helped them win that wild card spot. Because the D-backs last year were in first on the first of every month last year.
Yeah, right until the end. They were pretty much in it. And then they had that awful start to September in which they just collapsed out of the race. And this is a team that I certainly didn't expect even through 31 games would be above 500.
They got rid of Pollock and Corbin and Goldschmidt.
And
right now Christian Walker's putting up better numbers than Paul Goldschmidt. You know, which is
so is Luke Voigt.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a point that Ken Rosenthal made on MLB Network yesterday on MLB Central. He was like, I'm not saying that these guys are better than Paul Goldschmidt, but when you look at the numbers that Christian Walker and Luke Voigt have put up, they've been better than Paul Goldschmidt.
And Goldschmidt's
so far this
been
season.
Good.
That is kind of weird.
He's been really good for the Cardinals.
And he's been good. Yeah, exactly. He's got an OPS near 900. Yeah, but eventually you think there's going to be a correction and those guys will come
back.
You
have to imagine. Hopefully, yeah, but.
Hopefully for Christian Walker, that is tomorrow through or today.
I'm still mad that the D-backs didn't play Christian Walker on Easter Sunday. It seemed like such a huge missed opportunity.
Oh boy. These are the marketing things you should be thinking of in Phoenix. You people. A tweet from at Rocky Mountain BK just now. Yeah, I'm AOC's boyfriend. So what? So let's turn to some burning topics that consumed Rocky's Twitter this week. Ian Desmond. I know it'll come as a real stunner to everybody.
Big surprise.
That Ian Desmond was a hot button of conversation for Rocky's Twitter this week. But there is a substantial debate that went along about Ian Desmond in which Manny Randhawa, one of the MLB.com writers who covers the Rockies, went on a not a rant, but went on a soliloquy. We'll
it was
say,
a spirited
Twitter,
back and forth with a couple of Rockies Twitter people. Yeah.
About how he believes that Ian Desmond is showing extreme signs of improvement, and that Rockies fans should be pleased with where Ian Desmond is because of a lot of the peripherals that suggest that he has changed things up and is a guy who is destined to become a good player again.
Yeah.
There are, to be fair, there are a lot of things that justify what Manny was talking about. Most notably, the ground ball and fly ball ratios for Ian Desmond. Ian Desmond, over his first 2 years in a Rockies uniform, put up ground ball ratios, ground ball percentages of 62.7% and 62.0%. Ratios of 3.02 ground balls per fly ball and 2.88 ground balls per fly ball. That number this year has dipped to 41.4%, while his fly ball percentage has jumped to 37.1%. So what does that suggest? Ian Desmond has revamped something and is concentrating on getting the ball in the air. That is good. That is a positive thing. There are also things about where Ian Desmond is right now that suggest that he's not really on track for a huge course correction and a lot of positive gains in 2019. His strikeout percentage is the highest that it's been since 2015. He's striking out in 26% of his plate appearances, and his walk percentage is the lowest that it has been since 2012. It's at 5.8%. And the overriding thing in all of it, he's slashing 196, 240,
364. That's what it comes down to. Like, yes, he's
like, yeah, there are a lot of things that are encouraging, but he's still that
guy.
He's
decreased his ground ball rate 20%. He's career high line drive percentage right now. That's great. Cool.
It's great.
He's slashing 196, 240, 361 for a 601 OPS.
Right.
He struck out 27 times. He's walked six. You know, like,
everybody rails against Raimel Tapia for his strikeout and walk numbers, and it's like, well,
this is,
you know, at least Raimel Tapia has the excuse of, oh, he's young and he's getting major league time really for the first time.
This is an occasion where, like, hey, it's possible for two things to be right at the same time.
Exactly.
Like, he can be improving his approach at the plate, trying to the ball in the air more and getting, you know, some results that are better than what we've seen in the last couple of years. He can also still be putting up terrible numbers all the time.
Right.
Which he is.
And that is the case. And as you all know, when you want to come for measured and well-reasoned and thought-out restraint, you come to the PDP. That's just the reputation that we've crafted for ourselves. And where the Rockies are right now is they're in a spot where, and this is a story, Nick Groek had a story for The Athletic on the 30th of April, and the headline was, "Something is happening with Ian Desmond, but is it too late for the Rockies?" And he dives into a lot of these things.
And Ian Desmond, he's still under contract for two more years.
It never will be. Ian Desmond, to his credit, said, quote, "I do feel happy with some of the results. I've saved my swings that I feel are good swings on my phone, and I feel like I have a lot of those, and I don't have a lot of hits to show for it. But there are definitely days so far when I've been frustrated because you can only say, hey, good swing, bad result so many times before it starts to wear on you."
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's been wearing on a lot of us for 3 years.
Except there weren't a lot of good swings then, you know.
Yeah, the Rockies, according to Nick's article, quote, "It's wearing on the Rockies, too. As Colorado sank to a 3-12 start, the worst season opening stretch in the club's history, Desmond's early season struggle to reach base wore on the Rockies, and manager Bud Black patched a hole with more playing time for 25-year-old Raimel Tapia. But there are hints Desmond may be figuring out his issues, clues that suggest he can recapture what made him a two-time All-Star, but will he get a chance?" It brings us to a larger conversation, which is, at this point, what suggests that Ian Desmond deserves a chance? Raimel Tapia is slashing 286, 329, 584. Tapia is doing it in pretty much every spot where you could ask him to. Tapia is a left-handed hitter who has actually been able to hit left-handed pitching decently, not great, but he's got a 763 OPS against left-handed pitching. He's connected for some extra base hits. He's got a homer off of a lefty.
Off Patrick Corbin, and it went
Patrick Corbin.
Coors.
Yeah. Of everybody. And granted, he's had very limited exposure against left-handed pitchers with just 18 at-bats, but Raimel Tapia is right now the guy who a lot of us thought he could be at the major league level. And what has he done that would not make him an everyday
guy. He's not
guy.
The greatest
he's
defender.
He's playing fine defense.
I mean,
it's not great, but it's kind of what you expect from Raimel Tapia. All that, you know, Ian Desmond's not an elite Gold Glove outfielder. He's played some very good defense at times. Yeah. He's also played some very confounding head-scratching defense at times.
Especially at Coors. Especially
at Coors. And Coors Field is a very difficult place to play the outfield, especially center field. It's very difficult. There's a ton of ground to cover. But Raimel Tapia has done everything that he can to earn and win that job. And Ian Desmond, there are these two realities about Ian Desmond that can coexist and both be true simultaneously. But to me, one of them overrides the other. And with apologies to Manny, the results are the only thing that matters. And the results have been bad.
And they don't seem to be trending in the right direction either.
No, and we're not in a spot where it's, it's still so early. He's 104 plate appearances into the season. And everybody says 100 plate appearances is where you start really figuring out. Yeah, plus two bad seasons. 100 plate appearances is where really things start leveling out. Yes, it's just over 100 plate appearances. But this is a dude who is just not getting it done. His weighted on base average is 256.
320 is considered
his
league
WRC
average.
Plus,
yeah.
His WRC plus is 41.
League average is 100.
100.
He's been 60% worse than the league average, basically.
The results aren't there. His offensive WAR right now, according to FanGraphs, is -8.2. His offensive rating in that category, batting and base running combined, it's not the.
No,
the
he's
exact
and on and he's
for WAR.
He's still been good against lefties this year. 801 OPS against lefties.
And that's great.
It's 499 against righties.
4 years is maybe platoon him.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not an everyday guy.
Like,
that's what we've said for over a season and a half. We didn't say it right out of the gate with him in his first year, but pretty soon
if it's
after.
If it's with Raimel, okay.
Yeah, that seems like a smart. And we said this 2 years ago. Why don't you just do that with Mark Reynolds? Platoon him. Seems like a smart plan. I don't know, man. It's a little mind-numbing. Last year it was, why don't you do it with Ryan McMahon? So it's, you know, to be fair, Raimel Tapia has gotten a lot of playing time as of late. He has deserved a lot of playing time as of late. He has been an everyday guy.
He's running
over the last 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, and he has shown the reasons why. Raimel Tapia was hitting 194 on April 13th. He is now a 286 hitter with a 914 OPS. That's a dude you have to have in your lineup. He's dynamic. He can run a little bit. The reason we've had the conversations about Ian Desmond, how long can you afford to keep him in the lineup over the last couple years has been his lack of production. This year is really the first time where you have somebody who is forcing the issue to keep him on the bench. I think the last couple years, the Rockies have not attempted to run out the young guys enough to see if is this a viable option to offset Ian Desmond. This year, Tapia has done that. So where they stand with him, I'm not sure. But it seems like the tide has swung in favor of at least a platoon situation with him, if not him being a reserve.
That'd be awesome, but we don't think that's going to happen whatsoever. Do we? I mean, do we really think that's going to happen? No, we don't.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we talked about it last week. Somebody asked Bud Black, like, oh, is Raimel Tapia an everyday guy now? And he was like, well, I don't know. Go crazy calling him every day. It's like,
why not?
What is crazy about that? He's OPSing 900. Yeah, like, what's crazy about
call him the everyday guy then. It's fine. Like, call him Nintendo. I don't care what you call him. Just put him in the lineup every day.
We've said time and time again on this show, we want Ian Desmond to be successful. If that helps the Rockies win more baseball games, that's great. Neither of us has anything against Ian Desmond. I have gone on many a monologue about what a great guy
on many
Ian
records
Desmond
saying
is.
That we like Ian Desmond as a guy.
Many records. Ian Desmond is a phenomenal human being. I've told the story of the Big Brothers Big Sisters Day in which he came out to Rockies Camp Day a million times on this podcast. He's a great guy. He has not been a great baseball player for the last 3 years. And again, two realities that can coexist simultaneously. But it's an interesting situation where the Rockies find themselves in at least the fact that they have an option now of somebody who can get some innings in a spot where Ian Desmond would have had them last year or 2 years ago. That is one kind of concerning area that the Rockies may be finding a solution to. Another spot where the Rockies have some concerns at the moment, one of them will be front and center tonight, and his name is Tyler Anderson. Tyler Anderson goes to the Hill this evening for your, my, and our Colorado Rockies, and he has been bad this year. So far, the overall numbers for Tyler Anderson, an 0-2 record in four starts, an ERA of 11.34.
Which is the worst in all of baseball.
He has given up 21 runs in 16 and two-thirds innings. Six home runs. He has walked 10 against 18 strikeouts. Opponents are batting .361 against
Seems Island bad.
It is bad and not good. We have, again, said many a time, we want Tyler Anderson to be successful. Tyler Anderson has shown flashes. The fun thing about Tyler Anderson is when he's good, he's so frustrating to opposing hitters because they're like, this dude is throwing 90 to 92 and I can't square anything up. Like, he's so fun to watch when he's good, but Tyler Anderson hasn't been good for a while.
No, he has not been. And we're coming to a point where it may be the end of the line for Tyler Anderson. Like, it's to a point where this might be the last chance that he gets tonight. It might be the last chance that he gets, just because, you know, I know the guys you want to replace him have not been exactly lighting it up in Albuquerque, your Ryan Castellanis, your Peter Lamberts, but how often can you keep running him out there every fifth day to get bashed in for three innings and then have to go to your bullpen for six? You know, it's not just he's pitching poorly and the team is losing those games. It's he's pitching poorly and the team is being taxed for 2 days in a row because they have to use so much of their bullpen for one day. And then you got to make sure the next guy goes. And if he gets lit up, and oh boy, here we go again, more bullpen guys. And, you know, it goes from there. If you don't have faith in Tyler Anderson to give you at least five innings with keeping the game close, then he's not someone you should have on your big league roster. I mean, we saw them cut the cord with Chad Bettis in the rotation fairly early this season. They put him in the bullpen. I know yesterday he gave up some, you know, singles and got out of that game, whatever, had to bring in Wade Davis in the game. But Chad Bettis has been pretty solid coming out of the bullpen. He's been touching 95. You know, he's kind of taken to that role. I don't know what would happen to Tyler Anderson, but it's not fun to watch every fifth day right now. And I know he's not enjoying the results. Nobody is.
Yeah.
But at some point, you got to make a tough decision. And Anderson was a first-round pick in 2010. You've stuck with him through a lot throughout his career, a lot of injuries. He's done some good for you. He's done some bad for you. You know, it's almost like the Raimel Tapia thing. Like, at some point, you got to either, you know, cut the cord or let him play. Pot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we're coming to a head with that right now, unfortunately.
Yeah. As you noted, the guys who are in AAA have not been great. Ryan Castellani, five starts, an ERA of 5.32.
He's striking out a lot of guys, though. Walking a lot of guys, too.
Yeah, that's encouraging. 28 strikeouts and 23 and two-thirds, but he's also walked 15. The young guy, Peter Lambert, you're not really expecting to see him until, I would say, late in this season at the earliest, but he's had some ugly returns in his early go-rounds in AAA, a 6.08 ERA this season through his first five starts. Jeff Hoffman's numbers are hideous, but that comes with a big caveat. Jeff Hoffman's numbers right now sit at 1-2 with a 9.16 ERA, but in his last start against Sacramento and at home at Albuquerque, so not in some pitcher's haven, which doesn't really exist in the Pacific Coast League anyway, but last time out, seven innings, three hits, one run, one walk, seven strikeouts. So maybe that's a sign. It's one outing. It's literally the smallest possible sample size. But maybe that's a sign that some of the tweaks that Jeff Hoffman's been working on have borne some fruit. I know we talked with Josh Sushan in the pregame radio show for the Topes the day after that start and went over kind of some of the things that he had overhauled. And so I guess possibly there's an opportunity that, you know, we saw that one start from Jeff Hoffman. And the first couple innings, he looked
fantastic.
Oh, that's the guy they traded for. And then he gives up, you know, four runs over five on six hits. There were some encouraging.
Gets the very stern talking to from Bud Black.
Yeah, the 5 minute long mound visit somehow.
And after that, he settled down. It was fine. So
yeah. But they've got to get something figured out. And you hope that Tyler Anderson can get himself righted, but I just don't see that. What's so weird is, like, Tyler Anderson had 3 months last year where he was really, really good. Last April, 1.88 ERA over five starts. Then he struggled in May, a 5.28 ERA. But then June, pretty good again, 3.52 over six outings. July, five outings, 2.16 was the ERA. We're talking about, oh man, he's an all-star snub. And then in August, he was atrocious, an 11.39 ERA in five starts. Bounced back in September, 3.25 in five starts. Good in the postseason. But when he's bad, he is really
and he's bad quickly.
yeah. And it doesn't. Yeah. It's not as though, you know, Jeff Hoffman will cruise through a couple innings. Then you'll get into this situation where it's like, oh, well, this is all going to go off the rails in the fourth. Tyler Anderson, it's like, OK, they're going to the bat rack down six.
Yeah. Runs. And everyone's scrambling to get a bat on the other side, too, because they want to hit.
Yeah. Tyler Anderson's first inning ERA this year is 11.25. His fourth inning ERA, he has only pitched the fourth inning three times, which kind of gives you an idea, 24. And his fifth inning ERA, he's only pitched an inning and two-thirds in the fifth this year. It is 21.60. So that suggests a lot. First of all, he is not having much success going through a lineup a second time. And second of all, he's not really having a whole lot of success going through a lineup the first time.
Which so, is kind of a problem.
Not great. Yeah, it's I don't know,
but
man.
That's also the problem.
There's no one
really champion at the bit to take his place.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue I would say at this stage is the Rockies don't really have any viable replacements for him. So this is a big one tonight, and he goes against Robbie Ray, and we will see where the Rockies stand after this one. And you hope that there's a scenario in which Tyler Anderson goes out and gives you six, seven innings of at times 2018 Tyler Anderson ball and allows two runs on three hits, something like that. But that is coming to a head, and it is kind of ugly at the moment.
Yeah. Well, anyway, moving on.
Kyle Freeland had a strange one in his first start back from the injured list. Came back after the blister on his middle finger on the pitching hand. And in that start against the Brewers, the first inning was atrocious. But after that, like, okay, decent. Goes six innings in total in that game and ends up taking the loss. He allowed five runs on six hits, but four of those runs came in the first inning, and the Rockies took a 5-1 loss. They couldn't hit anything anyway because they were facing a Milwaukee Brewers pitching staff that for some reason looks like the 27th.
Except for the last two games.
Except for the last two games, thank God. But was it a sign of things that you're concerned about, or was it this is a guy who's just getting back into having the feel for throwing pitches, coming off of the blister? It's been 9 days since he's pitched.
That's it. The blister issues are just really annoying, and we talked about this on the last week's podcast, that those things don't really tend to go away. They just become more manageable, and the fact he's able to get through six, still worrying about that. The swing and miss stuff hasn't exactly been there for him this year like it was the last year. The velocity seems like it's been okay. But I think it's more a testament to what Kyle Freeland is as a as like a bulldog kind of pitcher, that he's able to just get through these situations with pretty decent results still. I mean, the fact that he had the big part of the issue with the blisters and that Phillies start. I know it started with the Atlanta and then the Giants, whatever. But then that Phillies start that he had on the 18th at Coors Field, where he was dealing with it the entire game and tossed six shutter innings, two hits, no walks, seven strikeouts, and then went on the IL. I mean, to the fact that he could pitch through it and still be as effective as that against a really good lineup says a lot about how Kyle Freeland is as a person and what he can do and how he can get through these games and whatever. So, it's going to come down to how much he can manage it over the next, however long, because these blister things don't go away. And pitching every fifth day, it's going to keep coming back and rearing its ugly head. maybe in the middle of a start, maybe in the first inning, maybe in the sixth, you know, of any start, maybe on the second day between the starts, who knows? But it's probably going to be there for a while. And so the fact that he's still able to give you six, even with all these issues that he's been having in, you know, 84 pitches, he gave you six, and 86 pitches against the Phillies, he gave you six, 76 pitches for the Giants and five, like, you know, it's still effective in keeping you in the ball game. It's just not what we saw from Kyle Freeland last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. The things that you get from Kyle Freeland on his worst days are still generally better than, you know, if you would have talked to a Rockies fan even 5 years ago or 10 years ago about the best days that they got from their pitching staff. Kyle Freeland's worst days are still like they're in most of those games for the most part. But I like the fact that they have two guys, and even I would argue an emergent John Gray in this category of three guys who pitch angry.
Yeah.
In Marquez, Freeland, and Gray. That's a good thing, because this is a pitching staff that over the course of franchise history has pitched scared way more often than it's pitched angry. And so I like that about this staff. What else? Charlie Blackmon. We don't have to talk anymore about Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah, thank God.
That's fantastic. Very happy about that. Should we get some Ask Babies?
Sure.
We asked on the tweets as we started recording today.
And we got some good ones,
EP questions. And yeah, we got some good ones. And we have gotten multiple on this category. The question being, when will we see Brendan Rodgers? And I'm going to use that for self-promotion. And that if you go to MILB.com right now, there is a scouting report story up on Brendan Rodgers in which I talked to opposing players and managers about Brendan Rodgers, and it kind of gives you an idea of where Brendan Rodgers is at this stage in his career, as he is with the AAA Albuquerque Isotopes. I don't think we're going to see Rodgers real soon. He is right now starting to get it figured out. At the AAA level, was not real good for the first few weeks of the season, and about 10 days ago, went on the road to Salt Lake, and in a five-game series, he went 12 for 22, had, I think, a two homers, six RBIs, four doubles, something like that, in that series. But before that, it was a much different narrative about Brendan Rodgers. I think the Rockies, they want to see a full month or 6 weeks or more of that at the AAA level.
Yeah, and also, you want to give him an opportunity to come up and play. And right now, I don't think there's a spot for him to play. You don't want to come and call him up and send down Hampson and then just have him sit on the bench and get two starts a week, or if that, you know.
Yeah, there's no point.
That's not the point either. You know, you don't want an injury to happen, but if I feel like that's the only way we see him up here now is if an injury happened to one of those guys in the middle infield.
Yeah. The only other scenario that I can really think of at the moment is Ryan McMahon has not really been hitting the ball as of late.
True.
If that continues, and now granted, Ryan McMahon has played some really, really good defense, and his versatility is a key thing to have. But Brendan Rodgers has that as well. Brendan Rodgers has played three different infield spots for the Rockies, second, third, and short, as he's come up throughout the minor leagues. McMahon has struggled. He has dropped back to a 216 average and a 650 OPS. If the Rockies did decide to go make a move in the middle infield and send McMahon and or Hampson back to AAA, then maybe Rodgers gets a look. But at this stage, they've won 12 out of 17. You're getting good play from Ryan McMahon, if not great play at the major league level as of yet, offensively. And to be fair, I think Ryan McMahon right now is just in one of those one of the recesses of the roller coaster of a major league season, especially when you're a young guy, where I think opposing pitching staffs have made adjustments to him, and now it's on him to adjust back. And I think Ryan McMahon will do that. He's shown throughout the course of his career that he's more than capable of doing that. It's just right now he's on one.
And he's played pretty damn good defense as well at second base, and it's he's proven himself he is a big leaguer. But yeah, I think it's just it's a slump right now. I think he'll bust out of it. I'm not exactly worried about Ryan McMahon right now. All right.
Yeah. So I would say that it's not likely that we'll see Brendan Rodgers real soon. But you can go to MILB.com right now and read that story.
All right. From 303 to NYC, another no good Nick. More likely as of today, Nolan finishes top three in NL MVP voting or Marquez finishes top three in NL Cy Young voting?
Nolan because voters are dumb, and the conversation about Nolan due to his contract has made them more hyper aware of him. And we all know that they, for some reason, have a blind spot mentally when it comes to giving Rockies pitchers extra credit for being good the way they dock hitters for being good because of Coors Field. So
I'm going to say both.
Okay.
Kyle Freeland got fourth last year in the NL Cy Young voting.
Yeah, that's true.
And
Kyle Freeland may not have even had as good of a season as Herman Marquez last year.
No, but Marquez started out so poorly in the season's first 2 months that, you know, the overall numbers didn't look that great, even though he was the best pitcher in the NL, besides maybe Jacob deGrom after the All-Star break. But no, yeah. I think Freeland finished fourth last year and probably where he deserved to finish too. I mean, deGrom, Scherzer, and Nola had amazing years last year. So yeah. I think both of those guys can finally end up where they should be. I think Marquez has done enough on a national stage when they've shown that he can pitch well, that guys have noticed like the kind of stuff that he has.
Yeah. Yeah. From our buddy Will at Will_E_777. What if Trevor Story wins an MVP before Nolan, number one? And number two, does Tyler Anderson have this start tonight before he's replaced in the rotation? And whom should...
Well, we kind of answered the Tyler Anderson thing. I personally, Jeff Hoffman will get the first crack. That's not going out on a limb. I think tonight will be the last shot for Tyler Anderson if he does not pitch well. I think that will be it. I think there's enough of a book on him that you don't have to be like, oh, well, maybe you'll figure it out. You'll give Jeff Hoffman that chance, I think, personally. And I think it's a...
I got a dark horse candidate for the rotation. Okay. Jamie Moyer.
LeVon Hernandez. Roy Oswalt.
Jose Contreras.
I think it's a trick question because Trevor Story will not win one before Nolan does. So that's like he could put up a better season than Nolan and Nolan would still... fare better because people know no one are
because again voters are dumb. Voters vote based on pedigree as much as they vote based on actual numbers.
From Dan Lucero at Dan Lucero Show, what should the Rockies do about the 25th spot on their roster? Hampson looks overmatched and a trip back to AAA might do him good, but I don't want to be subjected to any more Valleca ABs either.
Yeah, that's the issue, is the Rockies don't have a whole lot of options when it comes to guys who are at the AAA level and are not Pat Valleca. I mean, they do have some guys there who are interesting. I'm actually going to have a story in Rockies Magazine coming up next month about a guy who has crushed at pretty much every spot in the system where he's been, and that's Roberto Ramos. But Roberto Ramos is a first baseman, so you're probably not really going to promote a guy like that to sit on the bench. Josh Fuentes obviously looked very overmatched. Do you give a look to Jonathan Daza
Well, in theory, you'd need an infielder, wouldn't you? I mean, just in theory,
exactly.
Is Peter Mooney going to get that call?
I don't think so. Miles Jones.
Elliot Soto is 29. Peter Mooney's 28. You're not really champing to get those guys up. They're playing well in Albuquerque right now. There's no fault of theirs, but,
So what we're saying is we have no idea.
Yeah,
it'll probably be Pat Valleca.
So we've been the champions of Garrett Hampson for a long time, and I still think he's going to be totally fine. But no, he is really fighting it right now. That's for damn sure.
Well, and the issue too is when you're not getting regular at bats, it's virtually impossible
to break out
to
of
get
it. Yeah, exactly.
As a hitter, So if it turns into a situation where they feel like they open that job back up, if Ryan McMahon continues slumping and then maybe Garrett Hampson gets back in there and he asserts himself at that job for a little while, you feel confident in both of those guys because they're both going to play good second base and they're both going to, at some point, I think, figure it out as offensive players and become productive major leaguers for a long time. But right now, Garrett Hampson's in an impossible spot.
Yeah, it's tough. He's not playing well. He's not playing regularly, and so he can't get himself out of the slump. It keeps time he goes up there, he sees the giant numbers on the Jumbotron saying, whatever he's hitting, 140 or whatever he's hitting now, and it just stares at you and it makes you feel worse. Then you ground out on the first pitch and it goes down and you're like, oh boy, okay, well.
Yeah.
That's the rough part of baseball, man. Especially when you're the 25th guy on the roster. True. But yeah, I'm with Dan. I don't want to see Pat Valleca ever again. No, nothing against Pat. He has run his course in Denver.
Yeah. This is a question that I very much like. And it comes from Brad Schmidt at @tweet_@Bradley. What's your favorite storyline of the first month? And how close is Tony Wolters not being a black hole on offense to the top? Our good buddy Ryan Freemeyer, who is at the top of Rocky Twitter. Ryan Freemeyer has like his if we were going to create a stat of like percentage of tweets that we hate, Ryan's would be like a 0.000000.
Yeah.
Like Ryan's great. And Ryan, a couple of weeks ago, was talking about like, why are we all on this kick of how Tony Walters is a better offensive player? And this at the time was pretty accurate of like, Tony Walters is really pretty much the same guy that he was last year, with the exception of like a little bit higher batting average than he had last season. Like the OPS was very similar. The power numbers are very similar. Since then, Tony Walters has actually like kind of taken off. He is now slashing .288, .355, .379. That's a .734 OPS.
Almost what it was his first stint in Colorado in 2016, almost exactly with those numbers. Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
OPS plus,
like Tony Walters.
OPS plus of 84.
That's fine
for a league average for a guy who gives you what he does defensively to be an 84 OPS plus. You take that every single time. I mean, he's got six doubles this year. He's walked nearly as many times as he struck out. He's driven in seven. You know, he's no longer the blackest of holes in that lineup. Which, like always said, with last year with Tony Walters, when he hit 170, if he could hit his weight, you're going to be thrilled with Tony Walters.
You'd be fine with it.
And he's hitting 288 now. I mean, it's got a high batting average on balls in play, so there's going to be some regression there more than likely. But, you know, he's not going to be a home run hitter. He's not, you know, going gap to gap, but he's giving you enough right now, giving you some decent at bats and finding some holes that, you know, you're not mad at it.
You take that.
He's doubled his OPS plus from last year right now.
Yeah. Especially because of the fact that the Rockies right now I don't think you can count on Chris Iannetta to be a major league roster member.
No.
Again, I think he will be, but I don't think that means that he should be.
Walters is your guy right now. He's your starting catcher.
Yeah, Walters, he's the guy. And Drew Butera is like, okay, as a backup guy.
Fine
like
backup.
You don't want him in there every day, but you know, it's Tony Walters is he is a very good storyline this year, and he's just such a likable.
Well, and as long as he keeps the stash, just the stash, like we don't need anything else, man. Just keep the stash. No. Don't do the soul patch. No. Don't do the whatever. Like keep just the stash, and you're fine.
We also have no way of proving that the offensive surge is not related to
that's what
stash.
I'm saying.
Like if he shaved the stash, he probably turns back into 2018
I think
Tony
so.
Walters. Let's see. From let's see what the next one is that I want to go with. Ah, this is a good one. From at Matt Patston. How much do you think the change of baseballs at AAA should change the way we evaluate performances of guys there? Thinking mostly of Brendan Rodgers, Pat Valaika.
Well, we did this last week, 2 weeks ago, talked about how the baseballs are made in different continents. And now AAA is using the MLB baseball, which a lot of people are saying is juiced and has been for a couple of years. And there's a lot of evidence that will point to that being the exact case. People want to see more home runs. The ball's traveling farther. It's been in cold weather. The ball's traveling like 460. Like, and that's not usually how that's supposed to work. So what they moved the Major League Baseball, put that in AAA this year. And the first month of the season, AAA had a record number of home runs. Correct.
They started their season like 50% higher.
They started the season on like April 6th and still set a record most home runs in a month in AAA. Wonder what the big difference was there. So how you evaluate those players in AAA because the offense is going to be good. For the Rockies, I don't think it's that much of a difference because you're always going to be taken off points for the Rockies minor leaguers based on what their offensive numbers, based on where they play, especially in Albuquerque. Yeah. The PCL is a notorious hitters league. Albuquerque is a notorious hitters park. There's a lot of guys hitting with some big time numbers at AAA right now. So, and that's unsurprising. So for me, won't change my evaluation of those guys much just because I've always taken their numbers in Albuquerque with a little bit of a grain of salt. I mean, like there are 13 guys, including pitchers, obviously, but like 13 guys are OPSing over 1,000 on the Albuquerque roster. Like, and there's obviously a lot of small sample sizes in there, Drew Butera and some pitchers, whatever, but like 13 guys, like OPS over 1,000 in Albuquerque. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's there's a story in USA Today, in which David Price basically has demanded that Major League Baseball come out with the details on potentially juiced balls. And the quote is, in interviews this past month with everyone from pitchers to scouts to umpires to team officials, they inform USA Today Sports that today's baseball may be juiced more than anyone's body during the height of baseball's ugly steroids era. Come on, just tell us, Boston Red Sox veteran starter David Price says. We all see it. Just come clean and say it. One of the other interesting things about this is the, and it dovetails off of a conversation that we just had, blisters. That is an issue that has cropped up a lot more with these baseballs. And this is from Hardball Talk, from Craig Calcaterra, or whatever the hell they call it now. It hasn't been called Hardball Talk. I guess it is still called Hardball Talk on the website.
They changed it?
I thought it was just the NBC MLB on NBC Sports, whatever it is. He says, quote, he's not the only one, referring to Price. Players in the homerific 2017 World Series noted it publicly, and pitchers who have experienced an increased occurrence of blisters have railed against the smoother, shorter-seamed balls as well. Yesterday, Rob Manfred acknowledged that the ball is the issue, but says it's just a case of uncontrollable variation in the manufacturing of baseballs, which is done by hand and features natural products, which make ensuring uniformity a bit trickier. What's interesting about that is there is actually flexibility in the parameters of a baseball's manufacturing, that these baseballs fall in line with what is accepted among Major League Baseball's requirements for the production, but could still be juiced compared to what baseballs were 5 years ago. Like, they'll still fall right into the rule book, but they have that wiggle room in order to maybe increase the offensive efficiency.
It's like you're using a BP ball, using a range ball, like at a golf course. It's not what you want. Like, it's, you know, especially for pitchers. And then, like, they're going to try to negate that by moving the mound back, is what they talked about. Like, that's stupid as hell. Just use a normal ball. Use what you were. Like,
I also don't get, like, many times throughout the history of baseball, they have raised or lowered the mound. What is the thought process of moving it back 2 feet? Just lower it.
If
that's what you're worried about,
stop messing with it.
Raise it again. Yeah, exactly. Or baseball's fine. You made $10 billion in profit last year. Make your sport more accessible to fans on television and on mobile devices, and I think things will probably
work. Just stop blackouts. That's literally all you have to do, and people will be so thrilled. Just stop blackouts. Blackouts are the dumbest thing. It's 2019. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really something. My turn?
From at Bloomer Deluxe, Ryan Bloom, good friend of the pod. What are you seeing as the early frontrunners for top 2019 Rockies memes?
Ooh, man.
I feel like the ones we've had, like the tacos and the wombat, like we still use those and they're still great. Like,
all of Connor's creations. We can't use Hunter Pence.
We've definitely been going more into Scott Oberg's Twitter account. Which is not actually Scott Oberg's Twitter account.
Don't ever
like search at Scott Oberg on Twitter and think that it's actually Scott Oberg, the Rockies pitcher's Twitter account.
Don't do it.
Our pal Tyler Q in Utah has done some Big J journalism, trying to find who, in fact, at Scott Oberg is as a person. Like meeting some of, like, you know, internet meeting some of his friends.
Yes, he has.
So. We are getting to the bottom, Tyler Q in Utah, getting to the bottom of who is the real at Scott Oberg. So keep that in mind.
Stay tuned for that.
Because
I don't know. I don't know if we really have any new ones this year.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are. I was thinking the other day, and now, God, I wish I could remember what it was. But I was thinking the other day about like a very early PDP meme. And I can't remember it now. I'm going to have to go back into like the 2014 tweets.
What was the thought process?
I don't even remember now. This is a very pointless thing. I have to ask you this one because I already have my answer for it. And maybe as I tell my answer, it'll give you time to think of it. But from our buddy Matt at M5 Hansen, you've been asked to make a sequel to the Todd Father commercial. What classic scene do you recreate and with whom?
A sequel to the Todd Father commercial.
So yeah, the Todd Father commercial, for those who don't remember.
Well, the Rockies used to do great commercials.
Great commercial. So the Seattle Mariners started this. It's an ad agency that I think is based in Seattle.
They still do the Mariners. Do the Mariners ones are still great.
Yeah, they still do the Mariners. They did the Yankees, I think, this year.
Yeah, with the Ottavino commercial and the Babe Ruth. That was, yeah. Yeah,
where Adam was being held at gunpoint to do that commercial. the Rockies used to do hilarious commercials. They did the dinger tipping one with Jason Hirsch
and LaTroy,
which is a classic. You know what's kind of funny? And I've always wondered what happened to this. But I remember reading, I think it was going into the 2008 season. And this was like for a while. And this is the reason why the Rockies stopped doing this baffles me, because it turned into a thing where every year people were like eagerly anticipating these commercials and they would like write columns about
Astoria Barrazzato.
It was like, it was a big thing. Like, I don't know why they stopped doing it, but I remember in 2008, there was a story about how, the Rockies are filming their commercials for this year. And there's this one coming out with Kaz Matsui that will have you rolling laughing. And that commercial was never released. And I wonder what the hell happened. I'm assuming that it probably was something that somebody watched in the front office and was like, yeah, this is racial.
You have to imagine, right?
I would imagine that's got to be the reason. But that always struck me as something it's like a Howler mystery to me. I have to find out. Maybe that'll be it. I'll start a Denver Sports Mysteries podcast.
There you go.
But the Todd Father one, Todd Helton is sitting in a chair as though he is Vito Corleone, and he turns around and all these dudes are Garrett Atkins,
Holiday,
Zawinski, and Matt Holiday. They're all asking him, requesting things.
I want to hit 40 home runs.
That are things that Todd Helton have already
batting
done.
Average. Yeah.
I want to win 8 gold gloves. I want, you know, all that stuff. And Todd turns around at Matt Holiday's request and says, because he has a mouthful of gum. And Holiday leans forward and goes, huh? And Todd takes the gum out of his
consider
mouth and says,
done.
Consider it done. And so that was the Todd Father commercial. So
and then they woke up with Dinger's head in his bed or something like that, right? Isn't that what it was?
yeah.
And that was the end of the commercial.
I forgot about that. Which is suggesting that you're going to cut Dinger's head off is a little dark.
Or Dinger woke up with a dead horse in his bed or something like that. I forget how it ended.
Maybe. Yeah. It was something like that. My answer to this question is, I'm not sure who it would be, but I'm going to say it'll be Nolan because he's the most iconic player on the roster currently. And he is being held against his will, laid out on a slab or a board of some sort, by, let's say, people who are dressed like the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the idea is that he is being tortured, although, of course, this is a television commercial, so it has to be something more lighthearted and humorous than that. But rather than yelling out freedom the way William Wallace did in Braveheart, he yells out Freeland for Kyle. And that is...
I think he just yells out Coors. See, I thought Matt was saying he wants another scene from The Godfather as like a sequel. So I was thinking that Dinger, it's like the five families scene where Michael Corleone gets his revenge on the five families. And it's just Dinger going in and murdering hideously all the other mascots of the National League West.
Just strangling, yeah,
like,
stabbing,
and like, you know,
and shooting
like the D-backs mascot Baxter is like getting a massage, and Dinger comes in and just shoots him in the head, like, kind of thing. Like, that's what I was thinking. I don't know.
That, by the way, is for the Godfather series being the trilogy being, well, two of the most incredible movies ever made. The wildly comically unrealistic way that people die after being shot in those movies. Mo Green is the worst. Mo Green is played by Abe Vigoda. He's not played by Abe Vigoda. Mo Green is played by, I don't even remember the actor's name. Alex Rocco. Yeah. Alex Rocco. That is the guy's name. Abe Vigoda plays one of the lieutenants in the Corleone family. But Mo Green is getting a massage. He gets shot through his glasses. Yeah. So gets shot in the eyeball. Presumably it goes right into his brain and kills him. But he very gently lays his head down, like takes the time to turn his head to the side and lays it down slowly in order to pass, and I assume, a peaceful death after getting his damn head blown off by somebody who walks through, waits for him to put his
glasses on. I'm imagining Baxter as Mo Green.
Mo Green.
Yeah, and so, yeah, okay, so that's like what I'm thinking. And but like in the book, Mario Puzo's book, The Godfather, there's a lot of mentioning of emptying of the bowels. So when these people die.
Coppola didn't want to go that route.
What a hack!
Yeah, unbelievable.
Let's get a couple more. Who? Mo Green or
Francis Ford Coppola. He was the main sponsor of the Women's Baseball World Cup in Florida. Very nice guy.
Francis Ford Coppola was the sponsor?
He was. Coppola was.
Oh, okay. Still.
Huh. Yeah, and he was there. He was in a box every day, watched the games every day. There were some rumors that he is thinking about trying to start up a professional women's baseball league again, which would be incredible. It was very cool. Very nice guy. Very nice guy. Anyway, let's keep going.
All right, from Ashton Yarbrough, Mount Rushmore of Denver sports stars. This is always a fun one.
John Elway.
Yeah, you know, for better or worse.
John Elway. A birthday present for John Elway.
He's starting to erase himself from the Mount Rushmore. It seems like every day, but
he really is.
He's trying to
in that organization every day.
Just like Infinity War himself. Like, hey guys, I don't feel. Hey Joe Sakic, I don't feel so good.
I don't feel so good. That's good though. And if it's one player from each franchise,
yeah. Let's say that.
Yeah, one from each franchise. It's obviously Elway.
Got to be Sakic.
It's obviously Sakic.
Yeah.
The Rockies, I would say my personal favorite player of all time is Larry Walker, but it's got to be Todd Helton for now. By the end of his career, I think it's
Nolan. I think Nolan's neck and neck with Todd right now, personally.
Yeah.
I know Todd's got
Nolan only because of the length of his career so far.
Yes.
The only reason it's not Nolan. The Nuggets one is interesting because the Nuggets' most legendary players, save Carmelo Anthony, all were either before we were
Alex
born
English,
or when we were really, really little.
Lieber,
so, like, it's probably Alex English, maybe Dan Issel, maybe Fat Lever, but it's like, I didn't watch many.
Well, and
guys.
The funny thing is, like, is it Dikembe? Because,
who was only there for six seasons.
Right, but, like,
or
he had the most, like, iconic seasons,
And he was a phenomenal.
Oh, and he was amazing. Yeah. Like, is it Dikembe for the Nuggets? That's fascinating because Carmelo's the easy one because he was the biggest name the Nuggets have ever had. Biggest, like, named superstar the Nuggets have ever had. But but do you really think of, like, Carmelo's Nuggets tenure be like, wow, they sure accomplished a lot.
What a
legend. Like,
Yeah. They literally made it past the first round once.
And it was when they got
They were the Washington Nationals with the exception of 1 year.
And then Anthony Carter didn't know what an inbounds play was.
God, I saw him at Costco once, like the year after that happened, and so badly wanted to go up to him and be like, "So, what went on there? What was the deal with that?" The thing that is so exciting though right now is you could make an argument that all four franchises in Denver currently have players on their roster that could be that.
Von Miller, Nolan Arenado, Nikola Jokic, and Nathan MacKinnon. Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty
that cool. is really cool.
And even Gabriel Landeskog could be in the conversation. He's not going to surpass MacKinnon, but there's a chance that like Gabriel Landeskog could have a better career by the time it's all over than Joe Sakic did. Gabriel Landeskog was captain of an NHL team at 19.
Yes, but
like what? And it was a different era, obviously, and Sakic put up some absurd
numbers. And
Joe
Sakic won two cups and I think,
but that's the crazy thing about Landeskog. He's still 26.
Yeah, I know.
He's 26. Like,
23 or whatever, you know, like
more years. I know. Nathan MacKinnon would still be the youngest player on the Rockies
that's
roster.
Stupid.
What? How is that possible? And he's been in the league for like 5 years now. It's insane. But that is a great question. I always love.
I got one more. I got to go here in a second. I got to call at 12:30. So sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Last one. From action player Adam at Take a Hike, and Adam's last name is spelled crazy, H-E-I-C-H-E. What is one person in your minds that would be the perfect trade acquisition? And I only read this one because I want to answer the second part. Also, how would you rank current Rockies?
We don't have enough time to do that because there's 9,000 of them now. But you are listening to the original Rockies podcast, the OG, the PDP.
literally never listened to another one. I have never.
No, like, listen, I do a podcast. I don't listen to podcasts.
I listen to podcasts that are about like true crime.
Yeah. I now have a 1 minute segment on Rob Parker's. If you know Rob Parker, he's a fun hot take artist, also a Hall of Fame voter on FS1. Loves being the center of the debate on embracing of debate. He has got a baseball podcast every week, and I have a 1 minute stat segment on it every week now. So it's on the Herd Network, Colin Cowherd Network of podcasts. If you want to go find it, it's called Inside the Parker. Little plug.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Perfect trade acquisition. Mike.
Yeah, I mean, right? Yeah. Hampson for Trout. Who says no?
let's go Vallejo.
Yeah, right.
How about that?
Perfect trade acquisition. Like, well, what do the Rockies really need right now? A starter, I guess. Like, they've, you know, when they have all their guys healthy, the offense, like, it's clicking along, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
They've got their top three guys are set in Freeland, Marquez, and Gray. And Senzatella has given you what you expect of Antonio Senzatella. I imagine he's going to be there. They could, of course, use another starter, but who couldn't? You know, I don't think they're going to sign Dallas Keuchel. You know, I don't think that's going to be the thing.
Or Craig Kimbrel.
What if, and this is a big what if Giants are out of it, obviously. Bumgarner's a free agent.
Ooh.
What if they somehow swing a deal for Bumgarner?
Ooh. I don't know how I'd feel about having to actually pretend to like Madison Bumgarner.
But what if? I'm not sure that would be. Well, what if that's the last piece of the puzzle to put the Rockies over the top?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's true.
What if? Now, I'm not saying the Giants trade division. I'm not saying the Rockies would do that same thing, but
yeah,
that'd be a fun one.
I'm going to throw out a crazy what-if scenario as well. This one is much less likely because he has two more years before free agency. But what if they've already negotiated an extension, a lengthy and pricey one, with one of their relatively young starters, although he is not as young as this guy? What if the New York Mets fall apart and Noah Syndergaard is available? That dude I've just wanted on my team for years because I think he is the coolest guy in baseball.
It'd be fun.
That would be the
greatest. That'd be fun.
That would be awesome. All right. We'll wrap it up. This is like an hour and a half long podcast.
Yeah, man. Today. Fun stuff.
I got to go take my dog for a walk. She's whining at me. I'm having a deck put in this weekend. Very exciting stuff. So, that'll do it. We'll wrap it up. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for all your ass PDPs. Love you. Bye. Where's your
bye? Bye.